But tonight, why we're here?
Why are we here?
Why are we here? We are here. Our speaker's from Ojai, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for tonight, Marilyn.
Hi, Marilyn. All right.
Thank you very much for such a great welcome. This is a great meeting. There's so much energy here. We don't have meetings this big in Ojai, and they're a little more quiet. So this is great. You guys are great. My name is Marilyn. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 28th of 2014. So I have a little over 4 years. My home group is the Beginners Meeting on Friday nights at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in Ojai. It's a great meeting. We address questions that beginners might have, topics that beginners might have. So it's really a good one. If you ever are in the area, come join us. I would like to thank Lynn for inviting me to speak tonight. Thank you for having me. Thank you to Heidi for driving me up, and to everyone who had dinner, and that was just a great experience. I felt very welcoming. If you're a newcomer, welcome. I hope that if alcohol is your problem, this is the place you belong, and I hope that you realize that a lot quicker than I did. And for those of you with birthdays, happy birthday, and your words were inspiring. I love everything every one of you said, and everything that I heard is what keeps me sober and coming back to this program. They say that you're supposed to say in a general way, that means no gory details, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So that also means I don't tell you what the weather was like the first time I got drunk. But I will say that my story was probably very much like a lot of yours. I drank, and it worked for a little while, and then I drank some more, and it didn't work nearly as often, and then I drank a whole lot more, and I did a lot of damage to myself and to my family and my relationships. And then I found AA, and my life started getting better. And pretty much that's my story, too. Tonight, I want to sort of focus on something that I've been working on in my own sobriety and kind of talk a little bit about that because, you know, I came into this program the first time in the early 90s, and I was pretty young then. I'm not going to tell you how young. And I stayed sober for 4 years, but I never got it. I never did the steps. It was more at that time about who was wearing what and who was hanging out with whom, and there seemed to be a lot of social part of it, but there wasn't a lot of real spiritual growth. And the reason was because the God of my understanding when I came in the 90s was an old man who lived in the sky who judged me every day of my life. And he particularly judged me for having sex. I don't really know why. But I went to, you know, I grew up in these fundamentalist kind of churches where sex was like the worst thing you could do if you weren't married. It seemed to me that it was worse than murder and it worse than anything. So, and I knew that because, you know, I had some sex. I knew pretty much I wasn't going to be in his favor ever. So when I came into the program, and they said that you should find a God of your understanding. The God of my understanding wasn't anybody I wanted around in my life. And I stayed for 4 years, which was, a little bit of time. And instead of working the steps, I got married to another sober alcoholic who had some other things going on, as some of us do. And it was a disaster, surprise. And it didn't last but more than a couple of years. And when I got out of that marriage, I was out with a friend of mine on a fishing boat. He was in a fishing tournament. Friend I just made told me he fishes. And they were all in this big boat, and they'd been out on the day fishing, and they were making mudslides in the blender, you know, and they handed me one, and I thought, you know, I just made the biggest mistake of my life, stone cold sober. What does it matter? And gets me emotional still today. And I proceeded to drink for quite a long time after that. And just like many of you, it didn't get any better. I did things to embarrass myself and things to humiliate myself. And I had a daughter at the time, and I did things to her that you probably are familiar with. I neglected her and abused her, and she moved out of my house pretty quickly, and I really don't blame her because I was pretty much a bitch. And I continued to drink for a long time, and it got worse and it got worse and it got worse, and I did not want to come back in this room, in these rooms, because I knew what I was going to have to do, and I didn't want to do it. I didn't want anything to do with a God of my understanding. I didn't want anything to do with you people, because the people that I had known, I felt, had hurt me in AA. I didn't want to admit that you were right. And I hung... You know, I've said this before, I rode that horse until it was dead. And you know what I mean. I mean, I just... And I got to the point where it was affecting my job, my work. I had a very good career in local government. And I can remember sitting in meetings at 8 o'clock in the morning that I would fight myself to get to, being so hungover that my brain would not think. And someone would ask me a question and I could not form a coherent sentence. And because it was getting in the way of my work, I retired early. That seems reasonable to me. And my daughter had moved to Indiana, and I thought, I will move to Indiana, and I will be with my daughter more. I will make amends. You know, here I was, this drunken mess, and I was going to make amends for the damage I had caused her. So I did. I sold my house, moved to Indiana, and guess what? I went to Indiana, and I was still living in this body, and I was still in my own head, and I was still drinking the amount. Only now that I didn't have to go to work, the drinking increased even more. And it got even worse. And I got even sicker. And so my day became, I would sleep until noon or 1 o'clock. I would get up and stagger around the house for a few hours with my head swollen up like this big, my stomach in knots. And I would drink some coffee and maybe eat a little bit of breakfast and hang on by my fingertips until I could justify about 4 o'clock in the afternoon drinking again. And I did that every day until about 3 in the morning, and then I would go to bed, pass out. I would collapse into bed and I would do the whole thing. And every day I would pray to this God that I didn't understand and I really didn't want to have much to do with. If you are there, please help me stop drinking. And every day I would get up and I would suffer through the hangover just long enough until I could have that next drink, and I would do it all over again. And it was painful. The other thing that I realized after I got sober this time, another thing that was difficult in my first go-around with sobriety is, that four-step is really difficult for a lot of us, and undertaking that. And, what I had, as a child, there was sexual trauma in my childhood. And what I learned when I got sober and when I went into rehab was that for every woman in my rehab and almost every man, that was the case. And I think that is the case for a lot of us. And sometimes I don't think that we really talk about that enough. Because when I got here, I knew that that was some of the pain that I drank over. But I couldn't understand, and I knew that the fourth step and fifth step was about taking responsibility, but I couldn't understand how I could have been responsible for that as a child. And so that really kept me kind of stuck in that place where I didn't see how pointing out my defects was going to relieve me of that pain that I felt, that from all of the things that had happened when I was a kid. And so I drank over that every day because I didn't know how. I didn't know how to work through that. And then I finally one day got down on my knees and I said to God, "I give up. If you want me to get sober, you're going to have to do it, because I can't." And I continued to drink for a couple of months, and I came to Ojai, where I'm from and where I have family. And out of the blue, I called a rehab place. And my father, we had just had to move my father out of his house and into a facility, so we were in the course of selling his house. And I called that place in Pasadena where they filmed Celebrity Rehab. And I thought, I didn't think that it would be any easier to get sober there, but I thought maybe they would have better food. So I called that place, and they said, "Well, we have a bed for you. Can you be down here tonight?" And I said, "Well, I have some business to take care of with my father." And I actually talked to the owner on the phone. And he said, he probably knows alcoholics, you think? He said, "If you give me a deposit, I will make sure that there's a bed for you when you're ready." And so I did. And somehow he knew, or God knew, that if I had some skin in the game, I would show up. So I did. And, I say, I got sober this time because I out of desperation. And I finally said, I went into this rehab center where they had filmed Celebrity Rehab, and they were using the 12 steps. And I thought, shit. they're going to talk about this God stuff, and I just don't know what I'm going to do about it. I just don't know if I can do this again. But I was struck so desperate that I was willing to do anything. So I got there, and I just surrendered. Someone said earlier that they surrendered. I said, "Okay, whatever it is I have to do, I will do it." So, and so I did. And, it was one of the greatest decisions I ever made, because one of the first things they asked you to do in rehab was to do a personal history, write out your history, no matter how many pages, to write it out. And I wrote about what had happened to me as a child. And when I went into the counselor, she said, "You are not responsible for this." And it was like, oh, yeah. She said, "What you are responsible for is how you react to it today, and whether or not you let it control your life today." And I thought, oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And so because she was able to hear me and hear my story and give me that kind of a response, I was able to say, okay, now I could do the steps. But the thing with God is still a struggle for me, because I still haven't really found a God that isn't that one I grew up with. So one of the first things I read when I read, after, you know, in the big book, and my favorite part of the big book, and I love that you have this quote here, because this is at the end of this appendix too, that talks about the spiritual experience. You know, I always felt like I never had one of the, yeah, I was jealous of you people who talked about how you had a personal experience with God, or you had this spiritual experience, because I never felt like I had that connection. I never had this feeling that I was in a relationship with any higher power. And when you told me to take step, there's your higher power. When you told me to take step three, I did it out of faith, and I said, "Okay, fine. I'm willing to have an open mind about this." But I just still didn't know. I still felt like I was missing out on something. So this appendix two is great, and it talks about how the spiritual experience that some of the early people in AA had about this thing coming over them isn't the norm, really. And that these revolutionary changes aren't always the case. It's not always the experience of every alcoholic. It says, among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations are by no means the rule. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that's great. Most of our experience are of what we call the educational variety. And then they quoted William James. And since I fancy myself such an intellectual, I thought, oh, okay, that's something I can, he's an authority I can relate to. And it talks about how people are in our lives are often really aware that we've had a change in ourselves way before we even are. And that it happens by what we do in our program, not because the lightning bolt hits us in the head. One of the first things that I heard when I got sober the second time is someone said to me, you know, spirituality is just doing what you say you're going to do and being where you say you're going to be. And I thought, oh, okay, I can get that. I can understand that. Because I wasn't that person before. And for me now to do what I say I'm going to do and be where I say I'm going to be is a real change. People can count on me now. I don't know how many times I would promise my daughter something, and then I would stop after work and have a drink, and an hour would turn into two, and that would turn into three and four, and pretty soon it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was thinking about how I was going to get up the next day and go to work again, and whatever I had promised my daughter was way in, out of my mind. But she never forgot those things. To this day, she reminds me. I don't know. Do you have any of you remember the Disney movie Pete's Dragon? So she was a very little girl, and I had made her a promise that I would take her to see Pete's Dragon. She reminds me of this. She reminds me of this incident still today. So I don't think she'll ever let me forget it. Although she says she's forgiven me. But I had promised her I'd take her. And somehow, I don't know, I think some guy asked me out on a date. And I thought, you know, it's a kid, Pete's Dragon, who cares, you know. But that's something that little girl never forgot. And, you know, it was little things like that. You talked about feeling this big when you got here. Those are the things that made me feel like I was this big. And I love this. I love this appendix in here. The last line says that it's willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness that are the essentials of recovery. But these are indispensable. It doesn't say that you have to believe in a certain God. It doesn't say that you have to think that he looks some way or or that you have to, you know, it's suggested that we pray every day, but it's not, we don't even have to do that. It's a suggestion. But willingness and open-mindedness are something that I can have today. So, so this God thing is something I'm really working through. It's come to my attention once again that I feel like my inner life is lacking. And so Heidi is also my sponsor. Thank you very much. And we've been going through the steps again. And we've been kind of working on step three a lot. And I'm kind of stuck there. Because I really feel like I want to understand this idea of what a spiritual life looks like. And what, for me... And I really want to under. I really want a God that is not that judgmental God that lived in the heavens and had a big white beard that I grew up with and wanted to know all about my sex life. You know, one of the things that I did when I this time when I first got sober is that I didn't do the first time. I mean, I took them seriously when they said, you know, do what we suggest, because I did not want to drink again. And so they said, get a sponsor. So I got out of rehab, and I went to back to Ojai for a few weeks, and I latched onto this woman there, and I said, I need a sponsor, and I need to do my steps right away. So she said, okay. So we did, and we went through, and she said, you know, you don't even, if you want to do a little bit of step four and then read it to me, and then a little bit more and then read it to me, we can even do that. And I said, okay, that works. So so I did a fourth and a fifth step with her, and then I went back, because I was still living in Indiana, and I went back to Indiana, and I walked into the first meeting the day that I got back into town, and it was a speaker meeting in a... back in Indiana, I lived in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and they have quite a few of these recovery homes, and they're big, and they have a lot of men and women that, you know, stay in these, and they are really a valuable asset in the community. It's amazing, but they'll have a meeting, and, you know, the people from the outside are welcome. So that was the meeting that I found that night that I got back into town, and I went to that meeting, and it happened to be a speaker meeting in this men's group, men's home, and this woman was speaking, this older lady, and she had about 29 years of sobriety. So the first thing I did was I went up to her, and I said, will you be my sponsor? Never met her in my life, and she said, well, okay, why don't you call me tomorrow, and we'll talk. So So I did. I just did everything that they suggested, because I did not want to drink again. So I called her the next day, and she said, well, let's get together. And so she became my sponsor. And she sponsors like 8 or 10 women, which is just amazing. And she's now in her late 70s. And so we went through the steps, you know, and then she said, well, we really need to get you a commitment. So she said, there's a meeting that happens every day at noon, because I didn't work when I was back there. It happens every day at noon, 4 days a week. It's from noon to 1, and he needs somebody to make coffee. So I said, okay, I'll do that. So I talked to the secretary, and the secretary wanted me to be there an hour before, and he wanted me to stay an hour after. And I thought, oh my God, you know, but okay, I'm going to do it. And so I did, and I'd get there an hour early, right in the middle of the day, and I'd stay an hour late, and I'd make, you know, coffee and food. They had food. They served a lot of meals, and people came in from all over. And you know, I did that for a little while, and then I wanted to take a class back there, but it was on one of those days that the meeting was on during, you know, 4 days a week. And so I called her, and I said, do you think it'd be okay if I took this class? And she said, I don't know. What's more important, taking that class or your sobriety? I went, okay, I guess I won't take that class. So I did it. I did this commitment for about a year and a half, and finally, one day, I said to her, you know, do you think that I could maybe give up one of those days going to and doing that meeting at lunchtime? She said, are you still doing that? Oh, so, I mean, I was, you know, and if you're new to the program, I swear that's what I had to do, and that's what I would suggest you to do is just jump in with both feet. You know, I had to give up. I love what you said. These are my friends now, because I had to give up almost everyone that I hung out with. I had to stop doing almost everything that I did, because it's tempting still. It is tempting still for me to go to a bar. The last time I went to a bar, I said, gosh, surely I can go in and just listen to some music. So I just wanted to hear some music, you know, get that whole vibe going. And I walked in, there's this narrow little bar in Ojai that has a, you know, this beautiful wooden structure in the back. And now all the bottles have all these colors, and they put these lights, and they're beautiful. And I looked at that, you know, and I thought, that's interesting. And I kind of sat so I didn't look directly at it. And then pretty soon I could hear them throbbing. And then pretty soon they started saying, Marilyn. Yeah. And then pretty soon they were screaming at me. And I said, I got to get out of here. I can't do it. You know, it's not safe for me to be in those places. Funny, the man that I was fishing with when I drank after my first 4 years, he was a longtime friend of mine, a longtime boyfriend of mine, let me be honest. And we had had this on and off sort of thing going for probably 30 years, believe it or not. And I got together with him after I got sober. You know, and I'd always fancy that he was my long-lost soulmate, that we had just, you know, ships passing in the night, all that shit, you know, that goes hot. Oh, Lord. You know, it was crazy up here. It still is sometimes. But, nobody loved me like he did, really. And so after I got sober, I got together with him one night. And he started talking, you know, and I thought, God, I don't even really like this guy. 30 years, I thought this guy was my soulmate, you know, and turns out All we did was drink really well together, and then we did, you know, the stuff you do after you drink really well together. That was it. God, you know, so everything in my life has had to change, almost everything. And thank God, because it was awful. It was miserable. You know, it's funny, I was really nervous when I sit up here because I worked for local government. I make presentations a lot for city councils, and but it usually involves a PowerPoint. You know, so I've got slides and bullet points and things like that. Thank God I don't have any of that for this. No pictures were taken, as far as I know. Now I forget where I was going with that point. But since I got sober, I've been able to repair the relationship with my daughter to a great extent. And the damage that I did to her really was is irreparable. My daughter is ill today. She has another ism. Not an alcohol. No, she's not an alcoholic. She can't work and she's on disability. So, you know, part of my amends is I help her a lot. And I've been able to have a relationship with my parents that involves me letting go of the past. You know, my parents drank a lot. And did other things too. And I had a lot of anger, but I've been able to let that go. They're both now in their 80s. It's amazing to me that the human body is that determined to live. After so many years of drinking, they're in their 80s, they're still alive, but they're in facilities. They're separate facilities, thank God. You know, I go to visit my mother every week, and I take her things that she might want. She loves to eat Fritos and drink Pepsi, so I take her Fritos and Pepsi, and you know, and I went to visit my father yesterday, and you know, today I can practice compassion towards them where I didn't have that before. And so I moved back from Indiana just the first part of this year. When I got sober, when I realized that my daughter was as sick as she was, I realized that the only thing that I could do for her, the only thing, was to get sober. And so I did that. And then I realized that there's nothing I can do to help her other than, you know, that my being present in her life every day was not going to get her well. And so because I hated Indiana, when I left there, it was -8. And I moved back the first of the year. And so, you know, I can go visit her and I can love her from a distance and try to be the best mother that I can be today. And I have a couple of grandchildren and I can be sober in their lives. You know, one of the big awakenings for me was my granddaughter was about 4 years old. We were back in Indiana. She was graduating from preschool. And they had done a fundraiser for her class with one of these food trucks like Schwann's or where you order food. And so the truck was there delivering the food and part of the food profit was going to go to the school. So we're waiting in line and my little granddaughter, 4 years old, says to me, "I bet they might have your favorite food." And I said, "Oh, really? What is that?" And, you know, there's people all around us. And she says, "Wine." And that was another instance where I felt about that big, just like you. And today I don't have to ever have those things happen. And it has been such a blessing. I was able to come back and go back to work full time. And I actually go to work every day and I'm awake and present at my job and I'm contributing. I feel like I'm making a difference. And, you know, it's just as frustrating as it was when I drank. But lo and behold, it's a little easier to take because now I'm physically well. Today, you know, sobriety isn't, for me, isn't all unicorns and rainbows. You know, shit happens, tough stuff happens. Some days are easier than others. Some days are kind of routine. You know, I hated when I was drinking, I hated routine. It was like the worst thing that you could tell me that was I had to do something every day. To me, that was death. And today I get up and every morning I walk my dog and I love it. And I do things routinely now that used to feel boring and now it feels like, oh, I'm now leading a regular life. This is how regular people live. You can count on, your dog can count on you to walk it every day. And that feels really wonderful. And I am so grateful for this program. And I am so grateful for people like you and people in other rooms just like this who welcome me no matter what into the door and they say, keep coming back. And I am so grateful today for what sobriety has given me. I'm still working on the God thing, but I'm so happy that I can actually have this conversation with people that really care about me, and that I have people that will take the time to talk to me about these things. And you know, I have a life today that I never expected to have. I started having stomach trouble when I was drinking. I was starting to have the physical effects. And my stomach felt every day like it had a campfire in it. Some of you might know how that felt. And so I decided it must be the wine, so I switched to vodka. Brilliant, right? And today, I don't have to take anything. I used to have to sleep sitting up, and I don't even take anything. Today, my stomach doesn't hurt, and that is a miracle. That small little thing is a miracle. And most, you know, mostly I am grateful. I'm grateful for all of you. I'm grateful for the opportunity to sort of start my life over again. And I am very grateful that you were generous enough to give me your time to listen to my story, to invite me here to speak. And I love you. Thank you for giving me my life.
Give Marilyn another round for coming up.